This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.
This is an ESPN special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
ESPN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
Peter has nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York News Desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Do you hear that? Do you hear what's happening? Brand new intros. It's 2020 and ENN is sponsored by the All-American Ford Auto Group. Shop the largest and best Ford group in the Northeast at allamericanford.net. All-American Ford has the largest selection and best prices with locations in Paramus, Hackensack, Old Bridge, and Point Pleasant, New Jersey. We'll start off by saying good evening to Michael. And then we'll say good evening to Don. Perfect.
Can I make one point, Peter, before you get into this?
Yeah, please.
So from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m., WABC in New York averaged 1.8 million people. WCBS from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. averaged 180,000. And one of our listeners, Ed Claremont, said CBS would have been better off airing Don reciting the top 100 movies of all time.
Gladiator is 34. 35 is Titanic.
They couldn't afford me.
From Here to Eternity, 36.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
Who do they hire to chew in the background? Because if you listen closely, I think it's like Brouncher just chowing down on food.
Gladiator is 34.
I think you hire Brouncher.
Titanic, another overrated movie. From Here to Eternity, 36.
People would be interested in that.
Well, there was some production work behind it. Yeah,
It would have been better than Gronk. There's anything. Anything would have been better than Gronk. Well, guys, former NBA commissioner and maybe the best sports commissioner of all time, certainly of my lifetime, David Stern, passed away at 77 years old on Wednesday afternoon. December 12th, he had a brain hemorrhage, and he passed away on Wednesday. He was the commissioner from 84 until 2014, and earlier today on Golic and Wingo, they, of course, had Adrian Wojnarowski on the show. He talked about Stern's biggest contribution to the game of basketball.
The globalization of the league. I mean, there's no Pascal Siakam in Toronto. If, you know, Basketball Without Borders wasn't instituted during his tenure, places like Africa where there weren't necessarily the facilities and the infrastructure to allow the development of players. You know, Yao Ming and the work he did to bring him to the NBA and the impact that had on the league, for especially for players and organizations, the money they've made and spreading the game, you know, to the corners of the globe.
Hey, he got it. He got it. He got it before anybody else did.
No, he really did. He took it to a completely different level. But to get a complete picture, Woj was asked if there are any stains on David Stern's legacy as commissioner.
Tim Donaghy is certainly a blemish on his record. And, you know, I think even the investigation into Donaghy after, you know, a league-appointed investigator, there are always questions about, I think, the legitimacy of the investigation, whether they were found everything that they should find, whether they wanted to find the entire truth there. I think those were, you know, going to be some questions, but listen, when you run a league for 30 years, there's going to be, you know, you're going to have a lot of crisis. There's no question about that. It's how you handle them. You know, his legacy, his impact on the game is, you know, largely perilous. I mean, what this league looks like now and how it goes forward is rooted in the decisions, the vision, and I think the will that David Stern had.
Well, I mean, when we had Donaghy on, he really had bad things to say about him. He didn't like Stern at all. But, you know, Stern was a very, very forceful guy. And there was one obit that I read, I'd give credit if I remember who said it. It said, you know, you can't make it all rosy and say everything was great. He was really tough to deal with. And when he, you know, got his mind on something, it was very, very difficult to change it. And there was a meeting once where Scott Skiles stood up and confronted Stern. Remember, Stern works for the owners, and Stern just said, shut up and sit down. And Skiles kind of lost his standing in the league because he shut up and sat down. That's how tough David Stern could be.
Well, he opened the doors for a league that had a massive drug problem, if you remember.
couldn't get their games on national television, couldn't get their games aired live. And there's also something that he deserves a lot of credit for, opening the door to cable. And he was criticized mightily for it. I remember, this is going back over 10 years ago, Michael, maybe 15 years ago, when the All-Star game went to TNT.
Yep.
People were like, what are you doing going to cable? But the relationship that he was able to build with ESPN, which I thought was significant. So I think him understanding cable television and what it meant, like over the air is great, but you're limited over the air, Michael. You know, it's nice to get your games on ABC and NBC and all that, but even in the heyday of the NBA, going back to those early 80s, Peter, there was only so much NBC can give them. But the relationship with TNT and ESPN really opened doors to having the pre- and post-game and the halftime shows, and I don't know if you could have gotten that over the air.
Also, we haven't really talked about this much, and I know, you know, football, the NFL has a nice job with Fox and CBS, but is there any other league in sports that has two networks that kind of their broadcasting of the sport is so well done and so highly coveted? Both ESPN and TNT, while totally separate, there's no crossover at all. It's just such a huge, it's just such a great show on both networks. And all of that started during that time too. As you pointed out earlier, Michael, everyone kind of throws it all to Larry and Magic, but when Larry and Magic got to the league, it hadn't gotten fixed yet.
Well, think about this. Even football, as powerful and as big as football is, think of the stars that are created. Like, Charles Barkley is a star. He's not doing games. He's just hosting and doing halftime and postgame on TNT, and he's a star.
I know. Meanwhile, Andrew and I were at a party and saw Kurt Menefee and had to spend like 3 minutes being like, that's Kurt Menefee, right? That's his name, Kurt Menefee.
Yeah.
You know, and all due respect to him, he does a great job, but it does speak to what the role is of these NBA people. I mean, Kenny too, we always talk about Charles. Let's not act like Kenny can't walk down the street either. These guys are all stars from this game. It really is global.
That was what he grasped more than anybody. I think that leagues were always at loggerheads with making the players stars because they felt that if they promoted the players would want more money. And Stern realized they are the stars. That's who we want to promote. We don't need to promote the game. We promote the stars. And he did that with Magic and Bird. And then, you know, he was also fortuitous in that when he became commissioner, a young man named Michael Jordan was joining the league. So it was a perfect storm.
But because I was thinking about this too. Like, really, was it Commissioner Stern that with Magic and Bird coming in? Remember, they played in the final in 79. They come into the NBA at the same time. That's really when the league popped. But I after talking to you and doing the show, Michael, maybe it wouldn't have happened with another commissioner. Because they did have Dr. J. It wasn't like they were bereft of stars in the 70s.
No, I mean, again, most commissioners wanted to keep the players down. Stern realized that, you know, having them rise up would only better the product and make it international, and they did.
Well, we also lost another sports legend of a very different variety, Don Larsen. Of course, known best as the only pitcher to ever throw a perfect game in a World Series, died at 90 years old. Let's listen to the great Vin Scully's call of Don Larsen's perfect game. And it is amazing, as we talked about earlier on the show. I mean, that perfect game, this was a very imperfect pitcher. And I don't know if it was the Vaccaro article, whichever article I first read this morning, talked about the last time he did an interview and the phone rang. He jokingly picked up and said, do you want to talk to me about my season on the Orioles?
Which was really bad.
Which was like 3-21.
Yeah.
He was absolutely awful. So he was someone who was clearly aware, very self-aware of how erratic his career was as a pitcher and his control. But of course, Michael, that game right there, the most legendary maybe pitching performance in postseason history.
And he embraced that one game and said that he thought about it a couple of times every single day and realized it gave him a post, career income. He did very well marketing himself and, guy like Andrew Levy, who we're friends with and, you know, for a very, very long time, he helped make Don Larsen a lot of money just off that perfect game. And then once David and David threw their perfect games,
right,
he kind of brought it up to the forefront again, and they were able to market the three of them together. And this guy lived life on his own terms. He liked to drink. That might have been one of his failings as a player. And, you know, in a lot of stories that you read, Mickey Mantle's book, they said that Don Larsen was still kind of drunk from the night before when he pitched the perfect game because he didn't think he was going to start. He got to the ballpark, and there was a ball in the shoe. That was how Casey Stengel would tell you that you're going to start. And he mowed down one of the great lineups in baseball history with the Brooklyn Dodgers. So one day in a life, he was perfect, and he lived off that day the rest of his life. And they made no bones about it. He wasn't embarrassed about it because how many people have that day? He had that day.
Yeah, don't try to be something you're not. That's significant. And of the perfect storm, a perfect game in a World Series for the New York Yankees. And Vince Scully on the call. I mean, give me a break, really. We're talking 60 years ago.
You know what's unbelievable, though? I was going to bring that up, Don. Peter makes choices that, I mean, the call that everybody plays is Bob Wolf's call.
Yes.
And the Scully call is not heard that much. And obviously, the audio is not great. He must have been like 25 years old then.
Yeah.
And he called the perfect game. But most people use Bob Wolf, and Peter went with Scully. Interesting choice.
Of course we went with Scully. Well, Scully's a voice on this show.
True.
Do you not remember when he called up and we had a lovely conversation with him?
I remember it every day.
He's called several times. I'd go as far as calling him a borderline friend of the show.
Hello.
There you go.
Thank you. That's him. Former friend of the show, Carmelo Anthony, was back at Madison Square Garden as a loser. Can you believe it?
Another
win for the New York Knicks. But we won't focus on Portland losing to the Knicks. We'll focus on Carmelo's 26-point performance and what he had to say after the game about the reaction he got at the Garden.
The love was definitely felt tonight, from the fans that was here, from just the city as a whole, just being back. I think that feeling is kind of hard to explain. But for me to kind of get that ovation and just, I think I've always, had the love from the city like that. But, to be back in this building where I spent so many years and, that love felt extremely good tonight.
I got to tell you one thing about Knicks fans that I wonder about. So that game last night, he gets a huge ovation when he's introduced, which he should. He's really loved by a grand segment of the Knicks population. Then every time he touched the ball, they cheer him. Oh, okay. Then he hit a shot that tied the game, and they cheered him. Well, are you rooting for the Knicks, or are you rooting for a guy who's not here anymore?
Well,
come on.
But you know that building, Michael. There's a lot of people who just want to be seen. There are a lot of people that were probably there because Carmelo was going to be there.
Yeah, but it's,
and they
it's
love
such
sticking
a bad
it to
look.
The Knicks.
Such a bad
but
look.
But it's been happening. They cheered Jordan, I remember. Michael, it's been happening at the Garden for a long time, and I'm not going to pigeonhole the Knicks fan base feeling that way. I think there's a difference between how Knicks fans feel and how the fans in the building feel. You got a lot of non-Knicks fans or not passionate Knicks fans that are in that building.
But
New Year's Day at Madison Square Garden.
But okay, so if it's not real passionate Knicks fans, and let's say we always hear that tourists account for maybe 6,000 people at the Knicks game each.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they cheering for Carmelo? They have no investment in him. It should be a Knicks. He should have been cheered loudly like he was when he was introduced with the starting lineup. That I get. But when he hits a shot to tie a game, you give him an ovation? That's not a real fan. It's not a fan.
Well, because I don't think there are a lot of real fans in the building, right, Peter? Come on.
I don't know. But also, again, we just talked about he may not be, he may not get his jersey hung up in the Garden. But for those fans who have been coming there for the last 10 years who love him on a season that even though they're playing better is still a lost season, I can't knock them for cheering Melo playing well. It's such a comeback story. He was completely out of the league. He couldn't get a job. And now he's dropping 26 points in regular season games. It's pretty incredible.
I'm trying to think of a Met player that got away because I don't want to always use the Yankees as a reference, but a Met player that they cheered once a Met, always a Met, and he gets introduced, starting lineup comes out, first time up, he gets, and then he hit a game tying home run. They're going to cheer him? No, they wouldn't do it. It doesn't make sense.
It would have to be somebody of major significance, like when Eddie Jockman came back.
Right,
he was released by the Rangers, comes back later that year as a Red Wing. Ranger fans were actually rooting for him to beat the Rangers, but we're talking about a Hall of Famer.
Right,
Eddie Jockman's in the Hall of Fame as a Ranger. Then maybe you can understand it. But Carmelo Anthony spent 6.5 years here. All right? I can understand if they did it for Patrick Ewing, if he came back with the Wizards or the Sonics and did that. But let's not overrate 6.5 years.
6.5 years.
No champion, one playoff round win. Right? 151 season. It's really one season, right?
Yeah, 54
wins.
1 year. Yeah. He had a nice career here.
No, and remember this. It's important to note he was a top 5-7 player in the league when he was on this team. There hasn't been a lot
at the beginning.
Yeah, at the
not at the end.
But for a few years.
Yep.
He was an absolute top player in the league, and he's on your team. That's not common with the Knicks. Dave Gettleman joined us earlier. It was a riveting interview. You should listen to the podcast if you haven't heard it yet. We asked him about the firing of Pat Shurmur. Here's what Gettleman had to say.
I'm sure that the last couple of days have not been that easy for you. So we'll start with the firing of the head coach, Pat Shurmur. Was that your call, Dave, or did it come from above you?
That was not my call.
So you would have kept him?
It came from above.
That was pretty much how the interview went.
Yeah, that was a lot of the interview. I will tell you, I believe the best moment of the interview was my involvement later in it. When I asked him about finding a coach who can communicate, and he openly admitted that he's not good at it and has to do a better job. Now, moments later, he continued to do that anyway. And Michael, you asked him about being condescending, and he said he'd never really heard that before.
Nah, people aren't being honest with him.
But that was a really, I thought the whole interview was interesting for a different reason, sort of his combativeness and his honesty about, you could really tell that he's not thrilled with what happened with Shurmur and his lack of control somewhat, potentially moving forward with football decisions. But the stuff about his personality and about Shurmur's personality, I thought was really telling and fascinating at the end of the interview.
I'd like to throw this at you two guys and see what you think. Do you think that the message that he's sending to New York fans, where they don't like the message he's sending, is compounded by the fact that he has such a thick Boston accent?
I've been saying that since the beginning.
You do believe that. Okay.
I think for sure it's a factor.
Don, you don't believe that?
It definitely makes his condescension more accentuated, right? But I don't know. I don't know how much that has to do with it.
Well, here's
Giant fans. A lot of Giant fans are Yankee fans and all that.
Well, I was going to say, what percentage of Giant fans are Yankee fans?
I would think a large percentage.
60? 70?
I would say between 60 and 70%.
Yes.
I know there's exceptions. I'm an exception.
And those people who are big Yankee fans, what percentage of those people are put off by everything Boston?
I like what Peter's doing here, the way he's doing
this. About half. I'd say at least half are put off by everything Boston. You mentioned the Celtics, they hate them. Patriots hate them. They hate everything. In fact, we've always talked about that, Don. It's kind of something we don't mention enough. Why do Giants fans hate the Patriots? You beat them twice. Because they hate the Red Sox. It's not even about the Patriots. It's about the hatred of Boston. So I do think his accent, between being condescending and having the voice of the most hated sports enemy in the whole town.
But if they're winning, they defend the guy.
100%.
You know, so the biggest thing is they're losing, and it probably doesn't help.
But it was interesting. I recommend you go check out the podcast if you weren't able to hear it. Now, one man who sadly is no longer employed right now is a friend of this show. His name is Freddie Kitchens.
Oh,
and
so sad.
Freddie is out after one season. Here's Jimmy Haslam. If there are any reservations in hiring Freddie Kitchens,
we didn't. First of all, it's an organizational decision, okay, of who the head coach was, and secondly, we wanted John to be front and center up there as his role of overall football operations. Felt that was appropriate at the time, so I wouldn't read anything into that.
Here he comes, Don.
Love it.
Jimmy Haslam. He's a good man. He's a good man. Jimmy Haslam. He brought me in here to do my job of the head footballing coach of the Cleveland Browns of Cleveland, Ohio. And I'm proud to have worked for him. And I did the best I could. But my pa always used to tell me about people who bring you in, let you go. Because sometimes pa would go, he'd hunt and we'd grab a rabbit. We'd put him in the cage for a while. And sometimes I go, pa, what you going to do with that rabbit? Are we going to eat that rabbit? And he'd say, no, son. We're just going to let him go. And one time we let the rabbit go and it ran for about 20 feet. And I ran up behind it. Guess what I did? I killed it. After we let it go, I killed it anyway. And that's how I feel about Jimmy Haslam. You put me in the cage, you let me out of the cage, and now that I'm out of the cage, I'm okay. I'm not going anywhere, by the way. I want you guys to know I've been reading Twitter, and Freddie Kitchens is staying on this show. I'm actually proud to announce I've signed a deal with ESPN, and I'm going to be a playoff expert on this year's program. Freddie Kitchens.
Don, did you sign off on this?
Yes.
You did.
We need
I wasn't
more.
Asked.
Would you have said no?
Yeah, I don't even like the man.
How dare you?
I can't believe the reaction on Twitter about Freddie Kitchens being fired
was because he
it was more about him not being on the show anymore than what he did or didn't do for Cleveland.
But that wasn't that the best part of it? Because think about how much disbelief you're suspending. Why would Freddie Kitchens being fired in Cleveland mean he can't be a regular as a fake Freddie Kitchens on this radio show?
Michael likes the consistency.
Really? And I didn't even realize it was fake. I really thought it was him.
Oh, I'm sorry. What did I say? That No.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry. Ron Rivera is the new head coach in Washington. And he was introduced today at Redskin Park, and he said it needs to be a family atmosphere in the District of Columbia.
We've got to build character. We've got to build culture. We've got to build team. We've got to build family. If we can do that, we can win. I watched Andy do that. I was on Andy's original staff. My first five seasons were with him. Okay, I was on three straight NFC championship games, and that was tremendous. It was a heck of a feeling to be involved in those kind of games. That's what we want to get to, but the only way we can do it is if we truly do become a family.
Now, obviously, family was on his mind because it was Thanksgiving.
That's the thing. It was Thanksgiving. It is January 2nd, but here's Dan Snyder opening the press conference.
Good afternoon. First off, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Wow.
Today's the beginning of a great new year for the Redskins organization.
Didn't anybody? Usually, the media has that fake little laugh. Why didn't anybody laugh at him when he said
no
that?
No one gave him a fake laugh. Nothing.
Because it was sad, is what it was.
You know, it was sad. The way he treated me when I offered him cookies.
You think there's any chance that Rivera can be successful here? This
yes.
is going to be another one.
Yeah.
You think he's one who he could be one who actually turns it around?
Well, I mean, I think he's going to have a say in who's going to be running the football operations. Bruce Allen's out, so that's important.
Del Rio's the new defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
We'll see. Anyways, Don, I know you wanted to talk about this. So for my last story in ENN, we got to talk about Torts. John Tortorella went off during a post-game presser after a decision that he felt screwed his Blue Jackets. Here's John Tortorella.
So the whistle blows. The whistle is blown at 19.2 on the clock. For some reason, the clock has run down a second and a tenth to 18.1. For whatever reason, I have no idea. So instead of resetting the clock, we have them tell our captain we're not going to do it. Toronto doesn't step in. Refs don't do their freaking job. And now we lose the game and we lose our goalie. So the chain of events, if it was done right, we don't lose our goalie, we win the hockey game. So all this technology, right? The technology and getting things right. The stubbornness tonight by the officials and by the league and Toronto, however it's supposed to work, screws us. It's ridiculous. I'm not taking any
I love. I miss him. He's so right about this, too. Again, regulation, Michael, penalty, all right? Clock runs down to 18.1. It should have stopped at 19.2. All right, what's a second? Well, a second means something when they score at the buzzer. And the goal doesn't count because they ran out of time.
Mm.
So the extra second would have meant they would have won the game in regulation. They go to overtime, right? Korpakovsky, their goaltender, gets hurt in overtime. He's out for 3 months.
Surgery.
So if they allow the goal, if the second doesn't get taken off the board, they win the game in regulation, their goalie's still okay, and they get 2 points. They get just 1 point, they lose their goaltender for 3 months. How are you not supposed to be upset by that?
Right, so the NHL fined him $20,000, but
yes,
what was their excuse?
Well, because he's a repeat offender. Remember,
not fining him. What was their excuse for the last minute?
We never heard any reason.
Second.
I haven't heard. So he gets fined. Most of it's because of his past. Remember, he's the one that accused the referees of the penalty shot in the Winter Classic 7 years ago because he said NBC wanted the game to go to overtime. That's a serious allegation. I can't defend that. But, Michael, he's right to be upset. I mean, and you know what? He's not going to want to hear this, but I was entertained by that. Right?
I know, very entertained. However, the league also gave him a warning. If he does it again over the next year, before it turns to 2021, he'll get a $25,000 fine. It's been assessed. It's a conditional fine that's basically sitting there if he does it again.
I think he'll do it again. $25,000 means nothing to him.
Yeah.
He's Torts.
But he's
not coaching, Pat.
But what I like about it is a lot of people think that it's like scripted. It's not. He's just
no. He's an angry man.
But he's an honest guy too, yeah. And he rubs a lot of people the wrong way. People that covered him, people that I know that covered him, don't like him for that. I never bothered because I never took it personally. He didn't not like me. He just didn't like the media.
He actually told me he did not like you.
Well, yeah, that,
and
that's
then he's being disingenuous because he did say that he got along with me. And that's
ladies
not right
and gentlemen,
to do that.
That will do it for your first ENN of 2020.
Nice.
Come strong.
We are going to take a couple of phone calls when we get back about everything that's happening. We'll talk some bowl games. And then we're going to have Chris Carlin duck in right before the debut of Carlin at Night. Not Carlin in the afternoon, not Carlin in the morning, not Carlin in the twilight, Carlin at Night. That's the name of the show.
Is that the name of the show?
Carlin at Night.
It's better than some names.
Like what?
The 10-1.
You don't like that name. It's too cumbersome for you.
Yeah, I want something different.
Like what? You never came up with anything.
I thought we did, didn't we?
I think on January 20th, they've come up, they ran it through a big PR firm. It's going to be Allen and Bart.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you come up with that?
I don't know.
Not Han and Scott sounds better, doesn't
Han
it?
Han and Scott.
Yeah.
Why does it sound better?
Just does. Doesn't it flow better?
I don't even know what they're going
to do. Alan and Bart, Han and Scott. Peter?
I'm not in love with... Okay.
You're not in love with either one, are you?
Yeah, he wanted that slot leading into this.
That's right.
Let's bring it out in the open. He wanted to do one.
I wanted to be Rosenberg and nothing. Yeah. Just Rosenberg.
No, the Michael Kay show with Peter Rosenberg it was going to be.
Yeah, the warm-up. The warm-up vehicle.
It was, pre-K. You know, pre-K.
Exactly. Howard Stern has the post-show, pre-show for the K-show every day.
Yeah. Well, that was not to be. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.